Anyway, I fell off the rickshaw.
Where?
In Mathura. And I was desperate for water. And there was this household nearby.
Oh yeah.
And
someone made some.
And they made that rose drink instead.
Oh, it was rose.
Because she's thinking water, because they were Vaishnavas as well. So they were thinking, I'll give him something better than that.
Yeah.
And I couldn't drink it because it was too thick and it was just trickling down my throat and I was dying from the water. Yeah, it was just, you know. Water, water, water. And they're giving me rose.
Well, the temple was supposed to open.
I know.
1974.
Yeah.
Janmashtami.
Yeah. We didn't make it.
You were here for that?
Yeah, sure. I was always here and getting chastised like crazy. You know, and like I was explaining to the devotees yesterday, you can't make excuses. It's the worst thing to do. If Prabhupada's not pleased with you, you don't make excuses. Well, you just say, I'm a fool.
That was a disaster.
You know, it was. You know, and
Prabhupada was writing to his wrote a letter.
Yeah.
I read the letter last night to Sridhar Maharaj, inviting him.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we'll take care of everything to come for the opening of Janmashtami.
Yeah.
1974.
And it was all down to the cement. That was the.
We drove down.
Yeah.
The road. And then we came. And then we saw the temple was a construction site.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing was done.
Yeah.
Oh. There were just pillars and rods.
A lot was done. A lot was done. But look, you know what? This is not about torturing me tonight. I still live with that torture. I'm 65 now and I'm still living with it every day of my life.
But you weren't sending the report.
Yeah.
Gurudas was.
Oh, all right, we'll blame him.
No, I read it. I retraced it all.
Yeah. And he wasn't
because
even.
The problem was.
He wasn't even involved, actually.
No, yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
The problem was traced to Tamal Krishna Goswami.
Oh, right.
Because he quit.
Oh.
He was GBC of India.
Right. The whole of India, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
And he quit and left and went to America.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada was in Juhu.
Mm. And there was no GBC.
So there was no GBC.
Mm.
So who was Prabhupada going to get the reports from?
Mm.
They had to get the reports from, the temple president.
Someone, yeah.
And they're not reliable.
No.
But they just want to look good.
Well, there was a reason.
So Gurdas was saying, Prabhupada, the temple's ready. Come and open it.
Yeah. But he was in Jaipur getting the deities ready. He had nothing to do with it.
Well, he was working.
You know, but he was there.
he wanted, I don't know, to say what Prabhupada wanted to hear or something like that.
Something. Anyway. Hey,
he had India-itis.
Wait till I see Gurudas again.
He came here. He was here. Gave some very nice talk.
Yeah. All right. Well, look. I'll just.
No. So I had to go. So Prabhupada had to do it. You guys couldn't get the cement and the steel.
That's right. Oh, well, it was cement mostly.
So Prabhupada had to do it.
Just by his presence, it happened.
Yeah.
And he
I would go every day to Mathura with.
Yeah.
Pranab. What was his name?
Pranav. Yeah.
Pranav.
Yeah.
Because he would speak Hindi.
Yeah.
And we would go.
Yeah.
To the bureaucrats.
Yeah.
The babus.
Oh. I think everyone came to Mathura after that. It's your turn.
Gurudas claimed it was him going to Delhi.
Oh.
No, that was wrong, and Prabhupada said that was wrong. He was going too high.
Yeah.
You had to go to the local. Ultimately, Prabhupada had to preach to the DM, the district magistrate.
Mm.
You know what the problem was? Because they were building the Pagal Baba Prabhupada Baba temple.
Huge place.
And he was getting all the cement and steel allocation.
Yeah.
And we weren't getting any.
Yeah.
So Prabhupada preached to the DM, and the DM, he converted him, and the DM said, okay. And then we got...
Yeah, I remember that Prabhupada ashram. Is it finished yet?
Huh?
Is it finished now? I think he was trying to do that skyscraper to the heavenly planet or something. He was trying to...
Well, he was on top.
Yeah.
No, it's about 10 stories.
Yeah, it's huge.
And on each story, there's a different... there's Shiva, there's Devi... No, I know about it. And you go up to different levels.
Yeah, that's
And on
nice.
The very top level, that's where he sat.
Yeah. It's like Ravana, you know, building that. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, it wasn't celestial though; it was sort of concrete. Yeah.
He was Pago Baba.
That's why he was coming.
You know what Pago means? Crazy man. Yeah, he was very crazy.
And I was also, I typed up these sheets because...
You're very well organized.
No, not particularly for my experiences, but just in this regard of what Prabhupada did before he even got around to establishing ISKCON.
Oh.
Just that there is lifetimes of work for any other person. There's a whole list that begins from birth.
Oh.
Up till 1964.
Oh.
I think it's developing into something like that, yeah. Well, there you are. Okay. So, should I have the kirtan or shall I just start? Or?
Yeah, just start.
Because it's late now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's getting late.
Kirtan is when, the Bhagavatam.
All right, well look, I'm going to skip through this two-page list just to show what Prabhupada did before he started to establish the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Okay? In 1896, September 1st, Srila Prabhupada kindly appeared in this world. In the Calcutta suburb of Toliganj. In 1901, at the age of 5, Srila Prabhupada began his own Rath Yatra.
Well, Toliganj, that was the birth house.
Yeah.
That's not where Prabhupada's family lived.
Right. Okay.
But that was the system was they had a...
He appeared there, though.
A separate house for giving birth. You don't give birth in your residence.
Right.
Because it's so impure.
So...
And we're getting that property.
Right.
At Toliganj.
Okay.
There's a tree. And... but it's a slum area. Not very nice.
Okay. No. Right.
Anyway.
Okay. In 1902, Srila Prabhupada began his own deity worship. In 1918, married Radharani Datta. In 1922, met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta for the first time.
And he had his first child in 1920.
Right.
So when he met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta in 22, he had a two-year-old child.
Okay.
That's important.
Okay.
Prabhupada, felt his knee was to his family.
You know where I took this from? The biography by Satsuru.
Oh, the Lila Amrita.
Yeah, so he forgot to put it in.
Yeah.
I can blame him. Okay. In 1925, visited Vrindavan for the first time. In 1928, met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's disciples in Allahabad, and helped them start a branch of the Gaudiya Math. In 1932, Srila Prabhupada traveled to Kosi and met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta for the second time. In 1932,
you know where Kosi is?
Yeah, it's just down.
Kosi, actually, it's within Vrindavan Dham.
Yeah, yeah.
But far off.
And it was in Kosi. There was that place where you could stop off and have refreshments there. And they had a very manicured garden.
Oh, really?
Because Garga Muni, one day I was picking him up from the airport, and it was a courtesy. And he said, Kosi's, drop me at Kosi. I said, yes, Maharaj, we will go to Kosi. And we had fries or something there, you know, some sauteed potatoes. Anyway, those are the days.
Oh, yeah.
In 1932, Srila Prabhupada received initiation from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta at Allahabad.
32?
32, yeah.
33.
Wow, it's check and balance, yeah? Didn't I? Hey, do you want to read it? you can blame Satsarupa again. In 1933-34, assisted his godbrothers to establish a Bombay branch of the Gaudiya Math. In 1935 in Bombay at the Gaudiya Math, Srila Prabhupada presented his Vyasa Pooja homage to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. In 1935, Srila Prabhupada met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta at Radhakund. In 1936, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta wrote to Srila Prabhupada asking him to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya in English. In 1939, Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers honored him with the title Bhaktivedanta. In 1944, Srila Prabhupada started the Bhakta Godhead magazine in Calcutta. And in 1949, began writing for the Gaudiya Patrika magazine. Hare Krishna. In 1952, Prabhupada revived Bhakta Godhead magazine from Allahabad. And in 1952 also, he began his Jhansi preaching. In 1953, Srila Prabhupada initiated his first disciple, Acharya Prabhaka, in Jhansi. In 1953 was the grand opening day of the League of Devotees in Jhansi. And in 1956 began Bhakta Godhead again from Delhi. And in 1956, Srila Prabhupada moved to the Vamsi Gopalji Temple in Vrindavan. And in 1958, wrote Vrindavan Bhajana at Vamsi Gopalaji Temple. In 1958, revived Bhakta Godhead magazine in Delhi after 2 years. In 1959, Srila Prabhupada accepted sannyas order from Keshava Maharaj in Mathura. In 1960, Srila Prabhupada published his first book, Easy Journey to Other Planets, in Delhi. In 1962, Srila Prabhupada moved to Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan for writing Srimad Bhagavatam. And in 1962 also, Srila Prabhupada published Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Volume 1 in Delhi. In 1964, Srila Prabhupada published Canto 1, Volume 2, met Prime Minister Shastri, and gave him a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Volume 1. On Janmashtami Day, held a festival at Radha Damodar Temple for promoting his volumes and his mission for preaching abroad. In 1965, published Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Volume 3, Sumati Maharaji agreed to send Srila Prabhupada to America and set sail from Calcutta for the United States. So, the significant events mentioned above are alone monumental proceedings in the life of Srila Prabhupada. As part of his ongoing journey in fulfilling the orders of his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. The point being that so much information is not mentioned, such as the pressures of making his business occupation successful, the delicate balance of family responsibility and day-to-day living. It is mentioned that Srila Prabhupada would constantly leave his home and family over a period of 30 years to travel and live in different places for the purposes of maintaining the balance between his family and his inner yearning to please his spiritual master. So those are some of the things, very, very, very summarized, just to give you a glimpse of what Prabhupada was doing. But for more detail of that, as probably most of you know, that Satsvarup Maharaj's biography of Srila Prabhupada is available to read, and it's been available for many years to read. And I personally think he's done an incredible job at producing that biography. It's a wonderful read, and I recommend you to read it if you haven't. Okay, well look, this is the third evening, and I feel very honored to be able to carry on sharing Prabhupada Leela. And I didn't think, actually, that it would go on so long. I mean, you know, it's been 4 hours already, and now we're going into the fifth hour, and by the time we finish, it'll be six hours of sharing, so that's nice. Okay, so we're going to start, or I'm going to start, sharing with you this wonderful story that happened in Bombay. And it's about it's about Srila Prabhupada giving us the money draft, or we thought we were going to get a money draft for the construction of the temple here. And in those days there was a lot of transcendental competition between Mayapur, the construction going on in Mayapur, and the construction going on here in Vrindavan. Although I have to say that there in Mayapur there were more devotees, you know, they were sort of heavy characters. There was Ramananda Maharaj's brother, Gagamuni, him alone was enough. You know, because he was very, very able and willing, and very good at convincing people to do things. Is that right? Yeah. So him alone was a challenge, you know, because here we had Gurudas and Yamuna for I think about 2 years. But then Sarabi came, and that made all the difference. Then we sort of leveled it up a bit, you know. But then there was the Chudananda, Bhavananda, Satadanya, who else was there? Jayapataka, of course, Jayapataka Maharaj. So it was a formidable group that we were up against, you know. And so we went to Bombay because periodically during the construction work we needed funds, and in those days Guru Kripa hadn't entered on the scene yet. He was coming later. So Prabhupada was receiving money from the BBT, or he was getting money from the BBT to loan us. Actually these monies were meant as loans only, and then sometimes he would ask different temples to contribute to also towards the construction work. Anyway, in this particular instance, Bhavananda Maharaj and Gagamuni Maharaj at that time were present in Prabhupada's room ahead of us. They were always getting ahead of us, asking for money for Mayapur. And we were outside, I forget exactly where it was in Bombay, I guess it was in those days, where was it? It was, anyway, it was some, in some room where Prabhupada was staying. Yeah. And we could hear, where we were sitting, the conversations that were going on in Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada was very resistant. He was throwing up so many arguments. And I thought, you know, your brother was expert at convincing. But he was up against Prabhupada. And that was
Prabhupada gave him the name Gargamuni.
Gargamuni.
Because he said, everyone has to give their money to you. And that included his devotees.
That's right. So we were hearing Prabhupada just giving reasons and challenging, and ultimately they came out of the room with nothing. They had zero, nothing. So they came out looking dejected, and we were thinking, oh, if they can't get money, how are we going to get money? What's the point in going in now, you know? The mood seemed to have been set. But that's an assumption. You know, you shouldn't assume that the mood is set, because you're dealing with Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada is his own man. He's Srila Prabhupada. So we went in and we presented, we had a nice presentation.
You and Sarabi.
Sarabi and myself. And he was asking both of us questions, and even though I was a complete bag of nerves, I mean, you know, being challenged by Srila Prabhupada wasn't an ordinary thing. And I was explaining the other evening about giving class in front of Prabhupada. How many times have you done that?
Well, once Prabhupada asked me to speak.
Yeah.
It was in Dallas.
Yeah.
In front of him.
Right. What was it like?
Well.
Tell us. Share your emotions.
It was very difficult. How can you speak about Krishna in front of Prabhupada?
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, I did it because he ordered me.
Yeah.
But he said it was good.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so
he was testing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So after some time of nerve-shattering experiences, finally Srila Prabhupada decided to give us some money. We were asking for about 2.5 lakhs of rupees at that time. That was a lot of money in those days, in the early 70s. But I think we ended up getting about 1.5. I think Prabhupada cut us back a lakh. So Prabhupada said, you come back tomorrow and I'll have a bank draft arranged so you can take it back to Vrindavan. And we came out of the room, we were thinking, God, we can't believe it. You know, we've actually got 1.5 lakh of rupees from Prabhupada. And we were in there for about 45 minutes altogether. So when we...
Actually, Prabhupada favored Sarabi.
Yeah.
You know, in the construction matters.
Yeah. Well, he was...
He was always disposed to give him what he asked for.
Yeah.
However, Prabhupada was equally as strict and heavy on Sarabi.
Oh.
Because, you know, he couldn't get the work done, finished.
Yeah.
So Prabhupada would always chastise him.
Constantly.
Why it's not finished. Why it's not finished.
Prabhupada was constantly pressurizing and prompting. And it's a very... I'm describing all these stories. 95% Prabhupada experiences thunderbolt. So that thunderbolt side. He had the rows are very soft and gentle. But when he wanted to get things done, and I've shared this information with you over the last two nights, and I've told you so many stories about the thunderbolt. So I think the biggest thunderbolt I've ever seen was when we didn't finish the construction on time. And Prabhupada came to Vrindavan and he was so upset with us, incredibly upset. And like I said, you cannot give excuses to Srila Prabhupada. It is just best to say, I'm a fool, I'm stupid, I'm useless, and I'll try harder. and that's all. And just be patient and just wait for Prabhupada to stop thundering you. Boom, 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 like that, you know. And that's how you learn. And that's what it says in Shastra, that you always have to appear as a fool in front of your spiritual master, and that goes for every disciple. That's the mood between disciple and guru. Anyway, we came out of the room. We didn't have the money yet, that's the thing.
Well, it's one thing to appear as a fool, but it's another thing to be a fool.
Right.
That's where we were.
Right, exactly. You know what? We're really foolish. We're big fools, aren't we? I'm surprised that we weren't called a Sanskrit name for a fool. What's the Sanskrit for foolish, do you know? Okay. Right, so next morning we go to... Oh, sorry, next afternoon we go to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada has the draft on the table. Now, what I want to do, I want to go interactive with this, because it was very animated. Okay, so I want to volunteer to come forward, because I want you to play. You want to come up? That's about the size of a draft. Well, it could be a bit wider, but anyway. This is the depiction or the representation of the money draft. Okay. So, Prabhupada had the draft. he didn't have it in his hand, it was on his desk. And he started asking us questions. And the main question was, how much does it cost by rickshaw to go from the temple to the Punjab National Bank and back, as opposed to him sending the draft registered post? Okay, there's a difference. Okay, so he wanted to know how much it was going to cost for the rickshaw, because he pretty much knew how much it was going to cost to send it registered post. Okay, so when we told Prabhupada that it was going to cost X amount to go back and forth, the difference between that rickshaw ride and the registered post was about 50 paisa, okay, half a rupee. So this is what happened.
To mail it to you direct.
To mail it, yeah.
Or to deposit it. Bank,
well, he was just saying to mail it to us,
yeah.
Right? And then we'd go and deposit the money, the check. So I'm going to stand up, although I'll sit here because it was sitting down. Okay, so I'm just about to give you the draft. So you grab it, you just touch it like that, right? Okay, so. As Prabhupada was giving the draft, don't pull it yet. Then Prabhupada asked the question about the money and the difference. So now start sort of slowly pulling it. Go on. Yeah. So Saravi was really anxious to just have the draft. So start pulling it. That's right. Okay, that's right. And then Prabhupada. Then he pull it back like that. Now you keep holding it, right? And it sort of went like that a little bit, right?
Not let go.
No. And Prabhupada then went, "I'll send it registered post." Like that. That's how it went, right?
And he sent it direct to the bank. Then.
No, he sent it to us.
They had it deposited.
Yeah. We deposited the draft.
So he wanted to know what the ritual was.
So that was funny. That was very animated. And if you sat in those moments, right, it was an incredible experience. And it lives with me, as you can see, even today. Because I just wanted to go, I wanted to you to interact, to just see the animation involved. And that wasn't really a great representation of that experience, but at least it gave you an idea, you know. Anyway, because in those days we were very poor. We didn't have lots of money like you have today. Although I think I'd be quite surprised how Prabhupada would feel about sometimes the way money is wasted here and it's not spent nicely. You know, but that's another thing. I won't get into that today. So money was very precious. So to all of a sudden have in your fingertips a draft for 1.5 lakh was a very overwhelming experience. Anyway, but finally we did get it and we deposited it at the bank, and the work went on. So that was the story. Okay. Okay, this is an interesting one. I think you were there in Vrindavan when this happened. Were you there when Prabhupada's son came for money?
Yeah.
And he was arguing with Prabhupada? Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada had word that his son was coming to Vrindavan to see him. And this was a family issue. It had nothing to do with us.
His name was Vrindavan.
Is it? Yeah, Vrindavan.
He had two sons. One was Mathura, and one was Vrindavan.
Vrindavan's son. But Prabhupada called him Vrindavan. Thank you. So, Prabhupada was thinking that my son is coming, and he knew what he was coming for. So Prabhupada called me into his room and he said to me that he regarded me as a diplomat. He says British people are very expert at dealing with other people. You know, you're in like a needle and out like a plow. That's what Prabhupada said. So he says, I want you to go and meet my son at the Mathura train station and soften him up. And I didn't question why Prabhupada was asking me to do this, but I really enjoyed actually Prabhupada asking me to do this. I felt honored to be able to be of assistance within his family matters, you know. I thought, oh, it's incredible. So what I did, I went again, because we were really tight with money. So I went on a rickshaw. I left in plenty of time so I didn't have to rush too much. I got to the train station, and when he got off the train, when Prabhupada's son got off the train, I hired a tonga, you know, a tonga. And I'm sure, have you all had a ride in a tonga?
Yeah.
What was it like? What did you think it was like? Yeah?
Where to where?
Yeah. Hmm. Fine.
When was that?
Years ago.
Yeah, not recently.
Yeah.
Nowadays, nobody.
There's no. Is there any tongas now?
I don't even see them.
Is there? Okay. Anyway, a tonga was it rocked you. You know, you sort of. You went along. It was like a little, what was it, a horse?
Yeah.
Yeah, a horse. It was pulling this like cart, but it was quite nice. It was sort of comfortable, and it was very different from just being on a rickshaw. Anyway, I bought some fruits and a lassie, I think it was, and put him on the tonga, and we got into some nice conversation. And I said, you know, it's really fortunate that we're here in Mathura, and even more fortunate we're going to be taking a tonga ride to Vrindavan. And I'd never met the man before in my life, but I seemed to sort of just get on okay, and we were having nice conversations. So by the time he got to Vrindavan, I think from my experience anyway, he looked quite relaxed and was glad to be there. And then we gave him a room to stay. And then he went to see Srila Prabhupada. But that wasn't very nice, actually, that experience between Prabhupada and his son. Were you there in the room when he was...
Maybe,
yeah. He's going on... And actually, Prabhupada wasn't well. I remember Prabhupada was suffering. And he was asking... Srila Prabhupada for money, for the business plan that he had. And Prabhupada says, I do not have any money. I am no longer in that relationship. You know, I'm a spiritual master. I'm the founder of Chariot of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. I'm a traveling sannyasi. I've renounced this world. And I'm trying to fulfill the prophecy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I'm not involved in these mundane affairs anymore. But obviously the son was not experiencing that type of relationship, and he still saw Srila Prabhupada as his father, who he was still dependent on to get money when he felt that he needed it. So Prabhupada did accommodate him. At least Prabhupada gave him, for the want of a better word, he gave him darshan. He allowed him to come and talk.
Well, it's ironic that Vrindavan is busy. He was a bookseller.
Yeah.
He had a bookshop.
Yeah. So, I was sitting in the room. I remember Prabhupada was sitting on his bed, because he had his bed in the main room at that time. And he was sitting on the side of his bed with his legs dangling over the side, you know, just toes touching the floor. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was there, Hansadura Maharaj was there, I remember. And I could feel the tension, you know, from Prabhupada's disciples, that they just didn't like to see Prabhupada being harassed, even by his own family member. Anyway, eventually, he left empty-handed. And it was sad in a way, because it didn't help Prabhupada's health whatsoever. But Prabhupada tolerated that. And you can imagine, after all that Prabhupada has done, transfers the globe 13 times, you know, we were all, of course, we were present, particularly Maharaj Brahmananda was present, because, as I explained as he came through the door this evening, he's practically on every page and every picture and every book the Prabhupada has ever published. So, and traveled extensively with Srila Prabhupada. So, he for one can understand how tiring it was a point for Srila Prabhupada as he was getting overwhelmed by the disease that he had. So that was another story that I had.
What? Eventually what Prabhupada did, through Garga Muni, who was in Calcutta, Prabhupada gave him sole agency for his books to sell in the state of Bengal.
Yeah.
That was his the opportunity
That's
right. Prabhupada gave.
Right.
But he was a failure.
Yeah.
He couldn't do anything.
Well, that's what Prabhupada said. He didn't know how to manage money. Yeah. Okay. One thing, over the last 2 days, I had a list of no-nos. Things that really Prabhupada didn't encourage his disciples to do. And there's still one here that I hadn't mentioned, so I'll mention it now. And that was that Prabhupada, and I was personally present when Prabhupada said this, particularly on this time. I don't know whether Prabhupada had said it before, but I've definitely heard Prabhupada say it here in Vrindavan, because this is where this particular mantra is always chanted. It's in Vrindavan with the Brijvasis. But Prabhupada didn't like us chanting so much Radhe Shyam. Prabhupada always indicated that we were in the line, we were Brahma Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bought the chanting of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. And even when we used to go for morning walks along the Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg, and Brijvasis would stop, if they were riding bicycles, they'd get off their bike and they would fold their hands and they would say to Prabhupada, Radhe Shyam. Like this, and Prabhupada would say, Hare Krishna. Like that. There was always cargo coming up and down the Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg. Buffaloes pulling big loads of hay, or loaded with bricks, or you know, there was always lots of traffic, and most of that traffic would always pay their respects to Srila Prabhupada. And most of the respects were in the form of saying Radhe Shyam. And Prabhupada would say that Brijbasis, they are under the line of Radharani, because in Vrindavan, Brijbasis are born here for a purpose. And Prabhupada says that that's what they are. They're Brijbasis, and they chant Radharani's name constantly.
And Jai Radhe?
Yeah? I don't know about Jai Radhe. I'm just saying that Radhe Shyam in particular was something that Prabhupada didn't like us chanting. You know? Okay. Srila Prabhupada wasn't fond of his disciples chanting Radhe Shyam. Prabhupada would always want us to chant Hare Krishna and not Radhe Shyam. Yeah. All I'm saying to you is what I heard Prabhupada say. I can't extend that.
That's for the Brijbasis.
Yeah.
Because Prabhupada in a lecture, he was lecturing about Radharani.
Yeah.
And he was saying the Brijbasis, they chant Radharani's name.
Yeah.
But that's for the Brijbasis. Prabhupada never taught us to do that.
Yeah. And it's not a criticism. When I say that, it's a description. There's
Prabhupada
a difference between
justified it by saying Hare Krishna. Hare means Radharani.
Yeah.
So we are chanting Radharani.
Yeah. And that is the mantra that Lord Chaitanya gave us, and we're in that line. So it's again, I just want to emphasize, it's not a criticism, it is a description. There's a big difference between something that you describe and something that you criticize about. So it's a wonderful name, isn't it? Radhe Radhe, you know, what's wrong with that? Nothing, absolutely nothing wrong. And it wasn't about Radhe Radhe, it was about Radhe Shyam. We had an ashram at the back when we were constructing, do you remember that?
Yeah.
It's like
Radhe
Shyam, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. And that was, they had 24-hour kirtan, and that was going into the ear, you know, every two. And they were all, there was a little loudspeaker, yeah, there was. And it was 24-7, you know. And a lot of those Babaji's, they were very aged Babaji's, and some had nice voices, some didn't, you know. Some were tired, and others weren't. So, anyway, I just thought I'd mention that, and there you go. All right, it's time for me to get more Thunderbolt now. I'm going to get criticized again, which is good. It's good for me. And this is about installing the bell in the temple. This is a big one because it's mentioned in the biography, and I was told Dhananjaya was also mentioning about this leela, about the bell. And
ringing the bell.
I installed the bell, or I was attempting to install it, and found great difficulty in actually getting that rope down to be able to pull it in a way that it would make the right sound, okay? And it looked, theoretically, it was easy peasy, okay? It was easy to do. Put the bell on the hook, you know, tie the rope on the hook inside the bell. And Prabhupada said to me,
it wasn't a very large bell.
It was quite heavy. It was quite heavy. It didn't look large, but it was. It took three of us to get it up there and get it on. Anyway, so also it was all the angles that you had to navigate, okay, the rope down. And the rope couldn't be too thick. You couldn't use nylon rope. You know, it was all experiential. You had to experiment with different things. The instruction that Prabhupada gave me was you have to use pulleys, okay? And I went down to Loy Bazaar and I bought about six pulleys, And these particular pulleys had no guard over them, right? It was just the wheel. And the rope kept slipping out, right? So what I did, I took the pulleys back, which was a big mistake, right? So Prabhupada was starting to get very upset because it was taking too long to eventually get this bell to chime. So he called me into his room and he said, "So what is news? Is bell working?" And I said, "No, Srila Prabhupada." He said, "So you have got the pulleys? You have fitted the pulleys?" And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada, but this is the thing, you know." Right? Wrong word to say, but, right? It's a slippery slope from now on. But they didn't have guards on them, Prabhupada, so I sent them back. He said, "God, I tell you, yeah." Prabhupada looked at me. Again, they were moments. And it wasn't very long, but his eyes, you know, they became huge. And he just called me a foolish rascal. I can't remember all the things that Prabhupada said to me because I think I probably passed out. I just leaned up against the wall or something, you know. But it was such an intense feeling and I felt like I dried up. I mean, how did you react when Prabhupada chastised you, you know, if it was like really an intense challenge?
The worst moment of your life.
It's horrible. I mean, you know, you feel like, I don't know, I don't want to say it, but you do feel like that. So, because by me saying but, that was it. If I would have just said, I've got pulleys with guards on Prabhupada and I'm fitting them tomorrow, even then he would have chastised me, but at least it would have been a bit more positive, right? But you live and learn. I was young and inexperienced, and I still am young and inexperienced, aren't I? Aren't I? Aren't I young and inexperienced? Right? So that was a lesson. That was another lesson. There were many lessons, you know. But I just want to just say one thing. When it was all said and done, Srila Prabhupada would actually joke. He was very jovial, and he would say, when the temple was opened and we had that memorable time of seeing Srila Prabhupada offering aarti to Krishna Balaram, that was like, it was such an accomplishment. And Saravi and I, we were together and we couldn't sleep for 4 days and four nights. We were in a state of suspended animation or something. We were just wandering around aimlessly, watching all the devotees arrive from all over the world. And I remember those kirtans because we started the 24-hour kirtan by dividing up kirtan over 24 hours with different temples in different countries representing. And I remember Uttama Sloka from Chicago. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. His shift came on with the Chicago temple, and it was the most incredible kirtan. I mean, I've heard some incredible kirtans, but Uttama Sloka, I don't know where he is now, but he was such a good kirtanist, you know.
Los Angeles.
Yeah. And Madhavisa, he was representing the Australian Yatra. He would also do wonderful kirtan. But right through the day and night, we had groups of kirtan, and it was wonderful. So getting back to the point, Prabhupada would be jovial, and he would say, I remember on some of the morning walks, just after the temple was opened, Prabhupada would say, "I put so much pressure on you guys." Well, he didn't say "you guys," but he said, "I put so much pressure on you." But he said, "I had to, and don't mind it." Prabhupada would say that. He says, "Please don't mind it." He says, "If I didn't think you could handle my thunderbolt, I wouldn't have done it. But as we can understand, Srila Prabhupada, he could see past, present, and future. He was divim. Mahatmanas duman partha divim prakriti. And the Mahatmas, the great souls, they're under the divim prakriti, the divine nature. And as a result, they are visionaries, because they can see past, present, and future. And just to sort of touch on that point, and you were here for this, when Sarabi first joined in Bombay, Srila Prabhupada said to him, "What's the meaning of the world?" And I've gone through this already, but I'm going to say it again. What to you is the reason for the world? What's the world all about? And there was silence for a minute, and then Prabhupada said, "The world is about decorating dead bodies." And Sarabi, he was always an artist. He was an architect, a designer. He designed furniture for the palaces in the Middle East. He worked for the sheikhs in the Middle East designing furniture. And he was an art teacher. He taught in Amsterdam University art. He was a very, very intelligent, very cultured person.
But that's a lot different from construction.
Well, he was the architect.
He didn't have anything to do with construction.
He was the architect and designer, basically, but he did take responsibility.
And Prabhupada made him do construction, although it was against his nature.
Yeah, it wasn't like he'd done it before. But that was it. He was the person. So Prabhupada would say, "My mercy is distributed everywhere equally." I remember a story, and I'm sure you remember this, Ramananda. I think it was a Mataji somewhere in the temple, I think it was in LA, said, "Srila Prabhupada, Vishnu Jan is making so much advancement, you are giving him so much mercy." And Srila Prabhupada says, "I am not giving so much mercy, it's just that he is taking the mercy that is there. My mercy is distributed equally to everybody. It's up to those to take that mercy and actually develop their Krishna consciousness accordingly." So we step up to the plate. I mean, Prabhupada, he asked myself, he asked Sarabi, he asked each and every individual devotee to do service. And it's about us stepping up to the plate and doing it, or not doing it. Just like Krishna said to Arjuna, "Now I've instructed you, so now you do. You decide what you want to do. You want to fight, or you want to go to the forest like you've been saying you might do." So it was worth it. When I look back, I'm happy. I wish Prabhupada had chastised me 10 times more. Because I know through that experiencing of the thunderbolt, I'm here today. If it was just the rose, "Oh, how are you, Kanarava, Hare Krishna," that wouldn't be enough for me. I want to be pressured, and I still want to be pressured. You want to say something?
Well, Prabhupada also said, about himself, that when he was chastised, somebody once asked Prabhupada, "Were you ever chastised by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati?" Mm. And Prabhupada said yes, and told the story.
Mm.
You know the story?
Yeah, go on. I don't know it.
Well, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was speaking, and it was in a hall, and Prabhupada was seated in the rear of the hall, and there was a god brother sitting next to him, and
you want water?
No, I have water.
Okay.
While Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was speaking, the god brother asked Prabhupada something. What is he saying? I didn't catch what he said. So Prabhupada turned to him and told him what Bhaktisiddhanta had just said. And then Bhaktisiddhanta stopped speaking and looked at Prabhupada. How can you speak when your spiritual master is speaking? How can you talk? And although Prabhupada, it was an innocent thing, Prabhupada wasn't talking something else. He was talking about what Bhaktisiddhanta was very strict. You have to pay complete attention. You have to hear with complete attention. And so Prabhupada was checked. But Prabhupada said that that was the most glorious day.
Fantastic.
To be chastised, actually.
Who hasn't been chastised yet? Who are they? Put your hands up. That's it. Great. No one.
Okay.
Chastise means to make tape.
You can reply that. You can reply that. Picking up so fast. Okay. All right. So it's going to start getting a little bit more intimate now. Srila Prabhupada's health started to really deteriorate here in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada's health really started to deteriorate here in Vrindavan. Although during that deterioration, there was also some waxing where it would go, his health would return, not to normality, but it would get better. And then it would go again down, you know? So, what Prabhupada was the acharya right to the very end. And Prabhupada taught us also how to leave the body. And months before he actually left his body, Prabhupada allowed his disciples to experiment with different ideologies, if you like, for the want of a better word, around medicinal processes. And I remember Guru Kripa and Yasodhananda, they went to South India and got a ring. Remember the astrological ring that they got? And they brought it back and put it on Prabhupada's hand, on his finger. It was astrological. It had different things on it.
The Navaratra?
Was it? Yeah, I think it was, yeah. It was gold. But it was... They traveled to South India specifically to get it made. So Prabhupada was allowing his disciples to try anything by hook or by crook, just to show them that it doesn't matter what you do or what you try, if Krishna doesn't want that to happen, it won't happen ultimately. Okay? And I remember Bhagaji, who Prabhupada was very fond of here, he one of the last resorts was, there was a Kaviraj also on call 24/7 here. He was always being called in to monitor and to administer some Ayurvedic medicine to Srila Prabhupada. And I remember, just digressing a little bit back, I remember Srila Prabhupada laying on his bed, and he used to have his disciples put the electric fire. Do you remember that little electric fire?
Heater.
Heater, that's right. And we used to stand on the bed and put it over Prabhupada's stomach, remember? Just near his stomach, because he used to suffer incredibly with stomach pain, you know? Anyway, Bhagavad Gita brought this allopathic doctor, and he was related somehow or other to a doctor called Dr. Engineer. And I think there was the male doctor and the female doctor, and the female doctor delivered a lot of the devotees' babies here. you know, I think Balagopal Vishalini, they had babies delivered by this doctor. Anyway, Engineer came, and he got his stethoscope out, and he started listening to Prabhupada's, you know, beat around his back and his chest. And after some time, he said, I think I will administer this medicine. And he took out his prescription book and he wrote a prescription. And the prescription was ripped off the pad, and I took the prescription in my hand. And when he left the room, Srila Prabhupada said, "Don't you go down to the chemist and pick up the medicine." He said, "Did you hear what he said?" He says, "I think." And Srila Prabhupada says, "If someone says, 'I think,' it means they don't know." Right? So he doesn't know what he's talking about. So rip it up. Rip up the prescription and don't go down to the doctor. It's a useless waste of time. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So this went on for weeks and weeks and weeks. Devotees, by hook or by crook, they were trying to find a way to recover Prabhupada's health. And I remember there was one thing that Prabhupada didn't go near. He didn't allow his body to be... Someone was suggesting acupuncture. Do you remember that? And Prabhupada said there was no way that I was going to get needles put in my body. You know, the needles, you know, I didn't realize that they're quite... they don't hurt, actually, do they? But anyway, Prabhupada didn't want to know about acupuncture. Anyway, it got to the point where enough was enough, and Prabhupada had decided to forego any of that trial and tribulation, trying to find out different methods, you know, or adopting methodologies for administering any kind of medicine. And Ramananda, maybe you could take us through a bit more about Prabhupada. He was... Even though he was suffering, but he was quite happy to let that go, the search for a medicinal solution. How did that play out?
Well,
is your microphone on?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, one of the things was that Prabhupada told us that he had a dream. And in the dream, he was being treated by a Ramanuja Kaviraj, and he was being given this Makandvaj. Makandvaj is a Ayurvedic medicine.
Like a paste or liquid?
No, it's a powder.
Okay.
And the Makandvaj, it consists of very exotic ingredients. There's pearls.
Gold dust. And
gold, silver.
Okay.
And even the, from the deer. The gland, what is it?
Musk.
What? Yeah, there's a gland that the deer has. It's very aromatic.
Right.
And so many things. And that he was cured from this. So he told this dream, so devotees were very anxious that, oh, we have to get this Makandvaj. So they sent one of the sannyasis to go to Delhi to get Makandvaj. We didn't know what it was. We never heard of Makandvaj. We didn't know what it was. We didn't know where to get it. And so he went to Delhi and to go find some Ayurvedic, and he somebody told him go here, go there, and he met somebody, and some Kavi Raj, and the Kavi said, oh, Makhandwaj? Yeah, I have Makhandwaj. I made some last week for someone, and I have it left over. There's a portion left over, and you can have it. And it's very expensive, you can imagine. And so the sannyasi came back to Vrindavan with the Makhandwaj to give to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was very reluctant to take it. The main reason is Prabhupada asked, where is the Kaviraj? Oh, he didn't come. He's in Delhi. See, the system is that the Kaviraj who makes the medicine, he has to administer it. You don't sell it like a pharmacy.
A product, yeah.
Chemist. So Prabhupada was very suspicious. Where is the Kaviraj? Why he's not here? And but the devotees, they were insisting to Prabhupada take this Makhandwaj because of the dream. And the devotees were desperate. And Prabhupada was reluctant to take it. But they persisted. I mean, they were actually begging Prabhupada, please take this. So finally Prabhupada agreed. And he took one dose. And then later on, Prabhupada complained that there's some forget the words he used. Some bad effect. And that's when he used the word poisonous. He didn't say it was poison, but he said it was poisonous. Huh? Yeah, there was some. I mean, Ayurvedic medicine, there's never any side effect in Ayurvedic medicine. In allopathic, there's side effects. Well, you shouldn't. That means they're mixing something else in there. There's, I know there's an Ayurvedic doctor here in Vrindavan. He mixes allopathic.
Wow.
In it.
Well, Panadol.
Yeah. And he's very famous because his allopathic medicine, I mean Ayurvedic medicine, you have to take it for several weeks for there to be any effect. But his medicine, you take it on 24 hours, you get relief.
Yeah. That's right.
So devotees think, oh, he's very good.
Yeah.
That's because he's mixing the capsules. Anyway, then Prabhupada didn't want it. Anyway, Prabhupada took it maybe two or three times, and then he stopped.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so the dream was a Ramanujite Kaviraj. So in Calcutta, the devotees went to the Marwari life members, who we were very close with, and they asked, you know, who does your treatment? Because Marwaris, they're like royalty. They live very...
Well, they're very opulent.
Opulent and the best of everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Birlas, they're Marwaris.
Mm.
So the Marwaris, they all said, oh, this one doctor, he treats all of our families. And it turned out that he was a Ramanujai. So they said, oh, here's the one.
So they
flew him from Calcutta here to Vrindavan. And when he walks in, the first thing he does, he asks, I want to see what medicine your guru is taking. And they showed him the Makhandwaj, and he looked at the Makhandwaj and said, this is poisonous.
Wow.
This is where this whole poison conspiracy comes from.
Right.
So, of course, to me, when you say something is poisonous, that doesn't necessarily mean it's poison. So, if what had they done, they had, this Makhandwaj was adulterated. And that's another thing that should have been suspicious. Because when you make Makhandwaj, you don't have any leftovers. When you make it, it's made to order, and then you, you know, deliver that amount. You don't have leftovers. So that, they should have been suspicious. So who knows what that stuff was? Probably had nothing to do with Makhandwaj. So, but the devotees, in their desperation, they, of course, just sending somebody off to Delhi to get Makhandwaj, you know, you don't do it like that. The whole thing was all wrong. And so that's when Prabhupada says poisonous, and the Kaviraj said poisonous, then they've, now they've interpreted that, of course, to mean that we were giving Prabhupada poison. There was a conspiracy and all that stuff. That's not true.
That's very good that you've said that, because I've never heard that before, and it makes sense.
Well, it's in the conversations.
Yeah.
The 1977 conversations, which I've just released.
Right.
Which, you know, the archives have kept for 30 years. But I've released them myself. And there's a discussion about poisoning.
Right.
One of the conversations.
Okay. Anyway, so this next story is a relief from what we're talking about, because Srila Prabhupada called me because some years before, Srila Prabhupada asked me to establish a Goshala, and I told you that story about how I had a Seiko watch and I sold it. And got, I went to Govardhan market and bought two cows, and that's how the Goshala started. But then the Goshala had progressed very wonderfully to over 100 cows, and I had been going to the military run Goshalas in the Agra district to learn crossbreeding, because I was explaining the local Haryana cows were really low milk yielders, whereas you got a Jersey or a Friesian cow, and they were very high milk yielders. The only problem is the Haryana cow could tolerate the stringent conditions of the sun here in this part of the world, and whereas Friesian cows, they couldn't, Jersey cows. I remember we had a pure Jersey cow here, and it was, oh my, in the summer it used to sit under a tree and breathe so heavily, the stomach was going in and out, in and out. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada called me and asked me if I could get, if somehow or other we could find a pure black cow with not one speck of white or brown or anything, pure black, head to foot. So, again, Bhagaji helped me. And we searched high and low, right throughout the district, and we came up with one black cow. And it was a beautiful cow. And Prabhupada wanted us to keep the cow outside the door here of his quarters. So it was here, and we laid a lot of hay, and we fed it really rich green fodder, and made the cow feel very at home. Because the milk was keeping Prabhupada's body to some extent healthy. And Prabhupada was drinking that milk daily, and it was so pleasing that he was doing that.
Did you get the black cow?
Yeah.
Was it 1977?
Oh. Yeah, it was before 77, because Prabhupada passed away in 77. So it could have been, maybe it was about 2.5, 3 months before Prabhupada passed away, yeah.
But
so, yeah.
Wasn't it very difficult to find a black cow?
Well, like I said, we hunted high and low in the whole district. Agra district is a big area. But eventually we did find one, and it was brought here. It was expensive, but who cares? You know, we bought it, tied it up outside the house.
It was one Ayurvedic doctor who prescribed milk from a black cow.
Mm. Well, that's good. You filled the gap. There's a gap. You filled it up.
And Prabhupada
good. Thank you.
Took that.
Yeah. So that was that. That was another small story in relationship to all that grief and feeling very disheartened about not being able to give Prabhupada something natural and some nice sustenance for his body. And during the time that Prabhupada was taking this milk, he was also wanting to get reports from different parts of the world about his book distribution, because that enlivened Prabhupada probably more than anything else. And do you remember he was getting reports from Bhakti Tirtha, Ganesham, at that time with Satsarup, they were the library party going through the Eastern European countries, weren't they?
Communist.
And they weren't safe countries, were they, to distribute Prabhupada's books, but they were persistent and got a lot of protection from Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, you know, to do that particular service. So Prabhupada was extremely enlivened to hear that they were distributing those books. Anyway, I'm coming to this story now where Prabhupada also wanted to hear soft kirtan 24 hours a day. You remember when we had to split into groups of 3 or 4? We had a little pair of cartels, just a very dinky pair of cartels, and we would just chant Hare Krishna very softly to Prabhupada. And time was drawing near, and it was so sad to see Prabhupada's body deteriorating like it was. And I remember I was part of a group. There was Pushkar and myself, and there were two other devotees, and I can't remember who they were. But we were the four in this particular group, and I was playing cartel. And I was leading the kirtan very softly, and Prabhupada was still able to sit up, and he put his hands like that on the edge of the bed, and his legs would dangle over the side. And during my relationship with Prabhupada over the years, and I look back in retrospect and think, if only I had for the want of a better word, the guts to be more explicit with Prabhupada in my relationship, in my service with Prabhupada. But I always had that sort of fear element around Prabhupada, you know. I think, anyway. So anyway, I was playing these cartels and singing softly, and I was just sitting right at Prabhupada's feet. And I'd look up like that, and there was Prabhupada, and he had his hands like this and his head down, and he was deep in thought.
They're actually finger symbols.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
cartels.
Finger symbols, yeah. And all of a sudden, this feeling came inside me. I was feeling extremely emotional. And I just wanted to in one gusto, in one breath, say something to make up for all the things that I wanted to say over the years that I never said to Prabhupada. So all of a sudden, on the top of my voice, it was very, very loud, I said, Jai Srila Prabhupada! Like that. And we were supposed to be chanting loudly, but I just couldn't help myself. Yeah. And I just let it go. I just didn't think. And Prabhupada went like this. And he looked down at me like that. And I just put my head down. I just carried on chanting. Softly. And after about 3 or 4 minutes, Prabhupada stopped the kirtan. And he looked at me and he said, due to your mercy, I'm living still today. And it's only because of that cow milk from that black cow that I have the sustenance to still live today. He said, thank you. This is your mercy. Thank you. And I was somehow or other I just kept chanting. But it was almost like Srila Prabhupada was validating all the years of me serving him at that one moment. And I thought at the same time, Srila Prabhupada is telling me that it's my mercy. And I kept on chanting and I just was overwhelmed with ecstasy. I was overwhelmed thinking, why is Srila Prabhupada actually saying this to me? And then within about 3 or 4 minutes, Prabhupada stopped me again. And he said, this is your mercy. I am so grateful to you for getting that black cow. And I just want to thank you. And he kept on saying 3 or 4 times, this is your mercy, this is your mercy, this is your mercy. And I just, tears were just rolling down my cheeks. And I wanted to come back and say, and I said, Srila Prabhupada, your mercy is beyond comprehension. And then I wrote a poem, and it was called Planting Seeds, which I still have that poem. And it's all about Prabhupada coming on the Jaladuta boat, and metaphorically I was explaining how Prabhupada's cargo, it wasn't a cruise liner, it wasn't a cruise ship, it wasn't a boat or a ship that had comforts. It was simply a cargo ship. It was uncomfortable. He was so aged, even 10 years previous. He had so many heart attacks on the boat going over. And he had every reason to turn back, but he never did, because he brought containers of seeds to plant in all our hearts. And those moments for me were worth thousands of lifetimes of chastisement, just feeling the wrath of Prabhupada because he wanted to please his spiritual master. He wanted to establish. Prabhupada knew when he was going to leave this planet. He knew what he wanted to do. He knew he had so much he wanted to do. So he would say, please excuse me. I just need to please my spiritual master. I need to spread. It said that in every town or village this message will be heard. And Prabhupada was the one. He was the man. He was the person who took it on himself like no other person, no other acharya in the line of disciplic succession did what Prabhupada did. And he took that cargo off the ship. And he took it on his shoulders. And he distributed those seeds. He was the gardener, the transcendental gardener. And we can see today the results of what Prabhupada has done, and into many, I'm sure, many centuries into the future. So that for me was a validation. Prabhupada had validated my feelings over all the years that I was serving Srila Prabhupada in just those moments by saying what he said. And I'll be eternally grateful to Srila Prabhupada. And in the days that preceded that day, I couldn't sleep. Eventually we had to leave the room and allow another group of chanters to chant for Prabhupada. I didn't want to leave the room. I felt I was glowing inside. I didn't want to leave Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. I saw Srila Prabhupada. He was asking so many people to come, and so many people arrived at Prabhupada's house. Such a mixture of and variegated groups of people came, and Prabhupada was saying the same thing over and over again. Please forgive me for any offenses that I've committed in the course of my preaching. And that was his soundbite every single time. Please forgive me, please forgive me, please forgive me, please forgive me. It just echoed over and over and over and over again. And I live with the assumption today, like I was living with it before. Srila Prabhupada, he died in the mood of Uttama Adhikari. And that was always Prabhupada. That was the real Prabhupada. He wasn't a Parivrajakacharya sannyasi. He had to take on the mood of Majjhima Adhikari. He had to discriminate during his preaching. He couldn't preach as an Uttama Adhikari. That wasn't possible. Uttama Adhikari sees everybody. He sees everybody greater than him. He sees himself as the lowest, and everybody better, higher. And that was a genuine mood. And Prabhupada died. Prabhupada, I'm sorry, I'll retract that. Prabhupada didn't die. He left his body in the mood that he was always in, as an Uttama Adhikari, coming from the spiritual world. So we try, we endeavor through sadhana siddhi, we try to perfect our lives But it's mixed also. We're also, to some extent, Kripa City, because Prabhupada gave us so much Kripa. He gave us so much mercy. And it's just the realization of trying to know that, that's all. We have to endeavor, all of us, to take our place in the spiritual world. Prabhupada is, we've gone into contract with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada is fulfilling his side, and it's all about us fulfilling ours. Please forgive me for you want to say something?
No.
No, it's not about me. It's 6:30. Does anyone want to say anything at all, or would anyone like to contribute anything? Yeah.
I've just got a short story. Harry's story told me about Prabhupada's health. I think it was topical, you were talking about it. One time a devotee came along who did acupressure, maybe Brahmananda remembers this, where he pressed the different pressure points in Prabhupada's hand, supposed to cure the glands and whatever else. And after this devotee came and did the treatment, Harry Sori asked him, "Well, Srila Prabhupada, what did you think of it?" And he said, "The cure is worse than the disease."
He was pressing hard. We would give massage to Prabhupada every day. So one devotee, a brahmachari, a book distributor from L.A., he came and he was saying that he wanted to massage Srila Prabhupada. You know, it doesn't work like that. But then he was telling me that he was professionally trained masseur, and he knew Swedish massage and Thai massage or this massage and that massage and everything, and he was expert. And I just brushed him off, but he was very persistent.
You brushed him off.
A book distributor. They don't take no for an answer.
How did you brush him off?
Well, so finally, after days of doing this, I finally said, "Okay," I said, "give me a massage and I'll see how you do." Because Prabhupada liked the massage done in a certain way. And you knew you were giving a good massage when Prabhupada would doze during the massage. Mm. That means he was completely relaxed. The idea of massage is to give relaxation, not discomfort. Anyway, I had this devotee give me a massage, and what do I know? I thought it was pretty good. So finally, I went to Srila Prabhupada, and I said, "Well, there's this devotee. He's expert. He gives massage. He gave me one. I said, it's all right." He very much wants to massage you,
like it's his life mission. So Prabhupada was very reluctant. Another thing about giving massage to Prabhupada is that there were two things. You couldn't perspire, which was very different. In India, when you're doing physical things, you know, you perspire. Mm. But you couldn't. Prabhupada didn't like that. That was considered dirty. You know, God forbid a perspiration should. So that was not, and another thing, your hands had to be cool. Couldn't have warm hands. There was one devotee, an Indian, he was sannyasi. He was a very good massager, but Prabhupada didn't like him because his hands were hot. No good. So you had to have cool hands. And that's also very difficult when you're massaging. Your hands are going to warm up. You know, it's in the tropical climate and everything. Anyway, Prabhupada agreed to have this devotee. He gave the massage. So he gave the massage. And so the next day I asked Prabhupada, you know, did you like it? And Prabhupada said no. He didn't like it. Because it wasn't, although it was professional and everything, but it wasn't satisfying, whatever. I mean, and that devotee, I don't know what happened to him afterwards. And so Prabhupada would have his servants give him this massage. How did we get on this?
I don't know.
No, I don't even know.
I think it was in reply to Advaita's comment.
The massage he was giving was, you know, they hurt you, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's medicinal or something, that they're the pressure points or something, but if it's painful, you don't give the spiritual master pain, obviously.
Is there any questions anybody would like to ask about what we've talked about tonight? Yeah, go ahead.
As Prabhupada did the grand opening arati for Krishna and Balaram, so our question is, who did the other two? Gaur Nithai and Radha Shyam Sundar.
I think I was... that, you know, it was just... You know, I think everyone was looking at one altar, to be honest. You know, look, you know what? That's an assumption. You know, that's my subjective reality, all right? But I would have thought anyone with a little bit of emotional intelligence would probably be looking at that altar. Okay? I don't know who... Do you know who...
Was an
Omkar? No, not initially. No. Narottamananda.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
At that time?
Yeah. Because Sitala was here and Pratima, I remember.
So you have to ask him?
Yeah.
He was here, you didn't ask him?
Right.
He didn't know?
Yeah. Well, do you remember Vishaka on that DVD? And she was talking about Tripurari's head in the way. You know, that was funny, wasn't it? Oh, sorry. I'll just repeat that. Sorry. Vishaka was filming for the whole world to see. And she couldn't see Prabhupada performing arati because Tripurari Maharaj's body was in the way, and she was even whispering in his ear. I mean, that was quite shouting in his ear, and that was quite...
Yeah, I mean, it
was like mass. Yeah. And you can see, you know, she was prepared to go to any length to move him away. You know?
And he was prepared
to stay.
That I'm not going to move for anything in the world.
Yeah.
He was the immovable object.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she was going to take a photograph no matter what.
She was the irresistible force.
Yeah,
yeah. But she won, though.
Yeah.
You know?
How did she did something?
Because, no, she said that if you stand here, you will be able to see Srila Prabhupada
during
the Aarti.
Right.
But if you move, the whole world will be able to see. Yeah, oh, that's right. Then the whole world can see. Yeah, yeah. He's in
trouble.
Die. Is there anything, any other questions? Okay. Oh. Yeah.
Radishan,
yeah.
What other mantras Prabhupada didn't like besides that?
What other mantras?
Yeah. What other the chanting or singing?
Didn't he like? Or
yeah.
I don't know. I can only share with you the information that I had, that was my lived experience. And during that lived experience with Prabhupada, that's what I perceived. That's what I heard, not perceived, but that's what Prabhupada said. Because, you know, when we first came to Vrindavan, it's a bit like, it's all one, if you like, you know. We adopt this mentality that it's all the same, it's all the same, you know. And, I've said Radhe Shyam. I used to wear that tilak as well. The dark tilak. Right. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
the
sure. Yeah, the black. Yeah. Yeah. She wants to respond to your question, I think. Yeah.
From my understanding and experience of hearing the different stories, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do as he did.
Mm.
And sometimes devotees would come from Mayapur, they would hear something from some Gaudiya Math, and they would start singing.
Mm.
This thing, jai this, jai that, and jai the other thing.
Mm.
And Prabhupada would be even hearing from his room, or even upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he would tell them to stop.
Yeah, that's true.
I think this happened in Mayapur once. It happened in Vrindavan several times.
Oh, I've heard. Actually, that's a remembrance.
Yeah.
I just realized now that that's happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Prabhupada would hear a devotee lead kirtan and not like it at all and tell him to stop.
Yeah. Sometimes they would sing Bhajya Shri, Bhajya Hare Krishna, and he would say, "Who's doing that? Just tell them to
something,
stop it."
Yeah, concoction. No.
Yeah, concoction. Yeah. And so when I hear the evening aartis, everybody gets into their own style, and they start chanting this mantra and that mantra and every other mantra and jai this and jai that.
Mm.
And nobody seems to be able to train the kirtan leaders.
Mm.
Why is that? Mr. Brahmachari over there, next to the books. So Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is so simple, you couldn't it.
Yeah, well, it's simple for the simple and complicated
for the
complicated.
Crooked.
And yeah, you know, just like, you know, there are spiritual protocols in that's what the Upadeshamrita is all about. It's all about etiquette and protocol, you know. But anyway, Prabhupada, I did experience that. And it was also the mood of the chanting. because the mood of the chanting should be to glorify the Supreme Lord, not to think that I'm a great
stretcher of stuff.
I'm not. Yeah.
It's not for ego inflation. Yeah. It's for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, who's just standing there, smiling at you, in front of you.
Look, okay. I'm just going to say a couple more things, but you go ahead.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that Prabhupada wanted the kirtan to be formulaic. And although Prabhupada gave, you know, very simple, specific mantras and even the way to dance, you know, we were doing the Swami step. But then later on we went to Mayapur and, you know, we saw the Bengali kirtan and dancing, and we adopted that dancing, which was very different, you know, running up and down. A little different than just... Well, I remember running, I was leading her up and down. And Papa was very happy with it. So.
Yeah, come on. Yeah? What happened?
Give him a microphone.
No, just a second.
Well, maybe they were getting doing overboard. Hare
Krishna. Hey, Punch.
Oh, my God.
Punch, I had a feeling with him. Have you eaten all my horseradish chutney yet? Do you remember that? Sorry, Hare Krishna. How are you?
Long time.
It's about time you showed up.
I've been here.
Anyway, go ahead.
No, the main thing Prabhupada wanted to see was our enthusiasm. So if we were going off into different things other than the prescribed, Prabhupada accepted it because we were doing it out of enthusiasm. And that's what Prabhupada wanted to see in our devotional service and our kirtan and everything. It should be enthusiasm. Otherwise, well, I don't want to say anything, but Gaudiya Math, what we saw Gaudiya Math doing kirtans, it seemed to us that there wasn't so much enthusiasm, and it was more just the prescribed things. So, and this is what Prabhupada always gave us, enthusiasm. That's how we were able to do what we did. What's the word for enthusiasm?
Utsahan. Utsahan. I just wanted to finish a couple. I just wanted to finish a couple of stories that were left over. And these are like heavy, heavy no-nos that Prabhupada would bring out. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Well.
Yeah, thank you. You too. Sorry. Hare Krishna. And philosophical speculation was probably one of the biggest irritants to Srila Prabhupada. And I had two experiences where the first one was there's a Goswami temple called Radha Gopinath, and there was a Grihastha godbrother of Srila Prabhupada, and Prajumna developed a relationship with this godbrother of Srila Prabhupada's, and this particular godbrother was very analytical. He would, not so much analytical, but he was studying what others would write. And at this point, Prajumna had lent him some of Srila Prabhupada's books, Srimad Bhagavatam, some cantos. And, well, they weren't cantos, they were probably just a couple of volumes. But what he did, he on a separate piece of paper, he started to correct some of the things that Prabhupada was writing in his books. And when Srila Prabhupada found out, I've never seen him so angry. He was so Prajumna, he was so angry with him. And Prabhupada asked me to take a rickshaw immediately and go to Radha Gopinath and take the books back. And that's what I did. And like I've said before over the last couple of days, that Prabhupada, even though it is not advised to do it, Prabhupada wasn't so harsh on people falling down through sex life. Prabhupada said that it's like a common cold. And even though it wasn't conducive for spiritual advancement, Prabhupada used to use the example how Lord Brahma would also chase his daughter and like that. And I remember older Vaishnavas used to come to Prabhupada and also reveal their minds about things that they had done. And Prabhupada was very compassionate. But when it came to philosophical deviation, that's when Prabhupada had zero tolerance to it. And he was very scathing. So that was in relationship with one of his Grihastha godbrothers at Radha Gopinath temple. And then there was the Nittai issue. You remember that one? That was heavy, you know. There was a godbrother of ours, and he was asked by Srila Prabhupada to come to Vrindavan to write the Gurukul curriculum for the school. And eventually, after many months, he produced something that Srila Prabhupada completely rejected. He said, "This is absolutely nothing. This curriculum is not what I want. It's got nothing to do with the simplicities of Krishna consciousness." It was almost like a regimental, regimic type of curriculum, and Prabhupada didn't want that. And there was all kinds of sports involved, like football, and Prabhupada didn't want his you know, these young children playing football in Vrindavan. Right. Anyway, so it was rejected outright. And Nittai, instead of taking the humble position and acting like a fool in front of Prabhupada and simply saying, "You're right, Srila Prabhupada, I was in Maya, I shouldn't have written that, I'm very sorry." He actually went to Srila Prabhupada's room and said to Srila Prabhupada, "I want your blessings that I will find a bona fide spiritual master." And I remember I was in the room, Bhagavadji was in the room, and there were some other disciples, other godbrothers, I forget who was there, but the feelings that I had toward that was that I just wanted to jump on Nittai and throttle him, you know, because what an offense to Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada reacted by saying, "Yes, I will bless you that you will never find a guru." And he walked out of the room, and Bhagavati was saying, "Srila Prabhupada, I'll run after him, I'll make him all right, I'll bring him back to you, and he'll lay dandavats at your feet. And Prabhupada says, no, you let him go. So what, how he was possessed to say a thing like that to Srila Prabhupada was unbelievable.
And the next day, then Prabhupada said, he has asked for my blessings that he should find a bona fide guru. So if I'm not a bona fide guru, what is the value of my blessing? So what he was asking was,
it's contradictory.
Totally insane, yeah. Stupid.
Yeah. Foolish.
Yeah.
Mudha. Yeah.
Was that godbrother who was criticizing him? Was that Srivatsa Goswami?
No, it was Raghunath.
No, someone else.
Adhikari. He was an Adhikari. I used to know the name, I can't remember.
What Prabhupada objected to...
He objected to the fact that he was criticizing what Prabhupada's purport.
Yeah.
You know, and Prabhupada
but
said who
what Prabhupada criticized was that Padumya had given him the books.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, giving him
if
the book...
If the person had purchased the books, then he's allowed, he can do say whatever he wants.
Hmm.
But if we give him the books for free, then it's our fault.
Hmm.
You're talking about Nittai asking Prabhupada for a bona fide, a pure devotee, bona fide guru. The other day in the Bhagavatam class, we heard that we should pray to Srila Prabhupada for an Uttam Adhikari guru. So what do you think about that?
I wasn't in the class, so I don't know.
No, he's saying that we should pray to Srila Prabhupada, just like Nittai said, bless me that I'll get a pure devotee, a bona fide guru, and we started in the class, and we should pray to Srila Prabhupada for a bona fide guru.
I can't.
What we have,
Srila
Prabhupada, is a bona fide guru.
We have, Srila Prabhupada.
Anyway, we
ask questions about what's relevant to what we're saying. This is, you're talking about another class, and we don't have any experience.
No, I was there.
I
was in the class.
Oh, then you can say.
Okay, Maharaj, what were you going to say? Oh. There's only one Maharaj over there. He's funny. What Maharaj? Is there anyone in the room?
No, what I was trying to comment is that it is a different context. It was so offensive what Nittai was saying, because Prabhupada was his Diksha Guru and he was present. It was that generation. So the context is completely different. And I think what Mataji is asking for would be a discussion on an Istagosti level, and it would be a somewhat different topic. So I would go along that we should respect should direct our questions to these remembrances of Prabhupada and in that context. This is a very important issue, but I think it's a little bit out of the protocol of this Sangha.
Hmm. If I can just say, whatever someone may say, I can't or we can't be responsible for someone else's behavior. All right? Now, if he had said that, and to be very honest, I can't remember. I just don't have such a sharp memory to know exactly what he said. Because some of the time, I don't even listen to some of the things that the speakers say at Bhagavatam. So I just have to be honest and say, I can't remember. But if that has been said, then that is very wrong and not correct. It's as simple as that. But we have to see. It needs to be rehashed, if it's possible. You know. But anyway, I can see it's impacted you. So, you know, that's not, you know. Yes, she did. She tried to get some sense, but it didn't happen. You know. And then you walked out of the temple, didn't you? Yeah. Yeah, okay. All right. Anyway, we'll... So, tonight has been quite a night, hasn't it? I mean, this is the longest we've
have
had.
You finished all your...
I finished now, yeah, I finished. Yeah. I brought 54 stories. Some were short. I could skip over, say, six short stories in about half an hour. But there were some longer ones. And it's taken 3 nights, basically.
You're going to write a book?
There's a book on its way, yeah. Yeah. And it's not only... These are separate, but... they can be somewhat of chapters within the book that I'm writing. I'm writing about many things. Like, for instance, there's a chapter about the criteria of Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's a chapter about the iron poker. Well, you know what, Prabhupada gives the example. The iron poker, if you put it in the fire, it becomes, and so that's like absorbing in the nine processes of devotional service. You put yourself in the fire of Krishna consciousness, and you become Krishna conscious, as opposed to not being Krishna conscious, like the iron poker is not the fire. And there are a few other chapters that I'm doing also. So we'll see how it evolves, you know. Maybe it'll be a bestseller. Maybe it won't. Who knows? Whatever. So, is there anything else?
I just want to follow up on that.
Yeah.
Well, Dhammananda, when you were talking about the Ramanuja finally coming from Calcutta.
Oh, yeah. What was the conclusion?
And,
the dream, right.
And saying, look, this is poison. What happened, you know, what happened after that? Yeah.
Well, he became the Kaviraj. And it's, he treated Prabhupada, you know, until the end. I don't remember his name. We called him the Kaviraj. He must have had a name. And you can read about him in Tamal Krishna Goswami's book, The Final Days. And of course, when he spoke in the conversations, the recorded conversation, when he spoke with Prabhupada, it was always in Bengali. So we didn't know. But we had Bhakti Charu Maharaj was translating. He would speak something, Prabhupada would say something, and then Tamal would ask Bhakti Charu, what did he just say? And then that's how we did it. But he was very good. Very expert and totally devoted to Prabhupada. and he would spend hours just roaming around Vrindavan, finding, you know, different herbs and plants to make medicine.
Mm.
The Kaviraj, they make their own medicine from herbs
and just the right amount.
And plants, yeah. You don't buy it in the shop or anything.
Did he get married to Prabhupada?
He was treating Prabhupada. And the only place you can read of it is in Tamal Krishna's book. He was also instrumental in when there was discussion when Prabhupada wanted to go on Parikram to Govardhan by bullock carts and so on. And in the conversations, the audio, but he's speaking Bengali, but I mean, lengthy conversations with Prabhupada. What is that? Well, I mean, my experience to treat Srila Prabhupada, I mean, it just that we had all you can imagine, any kind of doctor, allopathic, Ayurvedic, homeopathic, just all the pathics. And everyone was ultimately frustrated. They couldn't diagnose and they couldn't treat Prabhupada. It was beyond their
It's psychopathic, so.
Even Prabhupada's friend, Dr. Ghosh, he came. You know Dr. Ghosh? Prabhupada in Allahabad, when he had his pharmacy, it was called, I think, Prayag Pharmaceuticals, or a chemist. The arrangement was that there was Dr. Ghosh at the clinic.
The laboratory.
You know, you would go to Dr. Ghosh to get treatment, and then he would write the prescription, and then and then Prabhupada was right there to supply the medicine.
Mm.
They were both in the same
thing.
Mm. And they were very close friends, Dr. Ghosh.
Mm.
Yeah, he came to treat Prabhupada also. He eventually left. Everyone was frustrated. No one could. They were somehow bewildered. Literally, Prabhupada did not eat anything for 6 months. And neither was he drinking anything. We would offer Prabhupada, you know, coconut water and then barley water, even tulsi water. And Prabhupada would say, I'm not thirsty. He hadn't drunken anything in 24 hours. What does it mean? I'm not thirsty. They were measuring Prabhupada, the amount of fluid he took in, they measured
and then his urination, the amount of urination they would measure, and they kept a diary. How many cc's? So, beyond human experience. Hare Krishna.
Is there anything else? Yeah.
May I ask one question? How do you feel? How do you feel? What's the difference between being attached to Srila Prabhupada and being attached to Krishna?
It's fine, it's good. We become attached to Krishna through his representative, Srila Prabhupada. How can we compare? We don't do that. That's not the way we do things. There's a set way, and Brahmanda Brahmate Kona Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prashade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. So the process is that when you finally come to the point of surrender, Krishna from within your heart gives you the Guru. He is the representative of Krishna, the Super Soul within your heart. So it's all about pleasing the Guru. You don't try to jump over the spiritual master's head and then compare how much you're in love with Krishna as opposed to how much you're in love with your Guru. It doesn't work like that. Atakshri Krishna Namadi Nava Ved Grayamindriye Sevan Lokehi Jivado. So Prabhupada is the representative of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya's process was to chant Hare Krishna and take Bhagavat Prasad. And in that way, jivador, the tongue, which is the most important sense, is controlled. And that instruction you get is from the bona fide spiritual master, not from Krishna. You understand? The ultimate goal is Krishna. But that love, that dormant love in your heart, has to be awakened. Ama jnana timarandasya jnana jnana salakaya chakshush. He forces the eyes open. That is the spiritual master's responsibility. So when you take initiation from the bona fide spiritual master, you're committed to the spiritual master. You are the dog. You wear the dog collar. You are the spiritual master's disciple. And it's all about serving the spiritual master. It's no good going before the deity and thinking, I love you Krishna, I love you Krishna. It's wonderful to think that. And in a sense, in a broader sense, there's nothing wrong with saying that. Because we are marginal energy, we are constitutionally always the servant of Krishna. But during the waking process, from coming through this material world, the spiritual master comes down causelessly to take you to Krishna. So when I say Atakshi Krishna, you don't work in a way that you will see Krishna, you work in a way that Krishna will see you. And the way that Krishna sees you is by developing your love for the spiritual master. Is that alright? Do you want to say anything else?
Well, Prabhupada used to say, by the mercy of Krishna, you get a bona fide guru, and by the mercy of the bona fide guru, you get Krishna. So, the two are inseparable. Can't differentiate. In that sense, they're one. Krishna and guru are one.
You get one from one and one from the other one.
So we see it in the light of a Tincha Beda Beda Tato. It's one, and he's right in saying that, but different also. And that is the reason. Otherwise, why are we going through this process?
So who's your guru? Huh? Okay. That's one guru. But everyone has two gurus. Have you read Chaitanya Charitamrita? That's the problem. Krishnas Kaviraj says everyone has two gurus. Like two rails on the track. You can't have one rule. You have to have two. So you have two gurus. So you have to find out who your other guru is. But I'm telling you, you have another guru.
Do you have two gurus?
Well, in special cases, the guru is the same guru takes both positions. But now that my Diksha Guru is no longer physically present, so I give emphasis to the Shiksha Guru, who happens to be the same person, but it's the Shiksha Guru. Yes. That was out of necessity. But in general speaking, according to Krishnadas Kaviraj, there are two gurus who may not be the same person. Yes.
In regard to that question, so by
Hare Krishna. In regard to that question, so the guru wants us to go to Krishna, but we heard from many devotees, you know, that they want to go to Prabhupada. So for example, I want to go to where Prabhupada is. I want to go with Prabhupada. So it seems that the attachment to our Prabhupada is more stronger than go back to Krishna. So the philosophy helps us to understand what you were saying right now. And we understand that with philosophy, but how to manage the feelings, the emotions, that we have some particular attachment to go to serve the guru because we are attached to the guru, then go back to Krishna.
Do you want me to answer that, or do you want to?
The example I give is that everyone has two parents. If I ask who's your parents, or who your parents are, I have to say two. You have a mother and you have a father. Krishnadas Kaviraj also says that the two gurus have to be treated equally. And to not do so is to create a disturbance in the prosecution of devotional service. So if I ask you, who do you love more, your mother or your father? How can you answer that? So your mother, she does certain things. Your father, he does certain things. So both. So you have to love both of them equally. I'm not saying. He has to find out. But he hasn't read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shiksha Guru and Diksha Guru. Right in the beginning, Adi Leela. The first thing he says. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if I remember properly, but doesn't he say that the Shiksha Guru generally becomes your Diksha Guru?
Take the microphone.
Not that we just have Dix. We have the founder Acharya, which is a very special position. The founder Acharya is the one authority that all of us have, Srila Prabhupada. And others have authority insofar as they purely represent Srila Prabhupada.
In that DVC paper, they have clearly said that Prabhupada is the Shiksha Guru for primary Shiksha Guru.
Yes.
There may be others, but we're talking about the primary. That's why we read the books. But if we don't read the books, then how can we know who our Shiksha Guru is if we don't know the Shiksha?
Even special Shiksha Guru, though, because every Acharyan online, we have all the Shiksha Gurus, the Prabhupada is very, very special.
Yes.
He's founder Acharyan.
He's a very special Shiksha Guru. We have Bhakti Siddhanta, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, but Prabhupada said, not that we should read Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's books. That now that we can jump over his very special position of so many Shiksha Gurus, he is Sandarcharya.
Prabhupada has given
the Shiksha. Prabhupada has given 16 rounds. Prabhupada has given the books. Prabhupada has given the deities.
Everything.
Prabhupada has given the prasadam, everything.
Nothing's changed.
So the Shiksha, Prabhupada is the Shiksha Guru.
Mm.
If a guru says, well, 16 rounds, I don't know, maybe let's do 8 rounds, but that can't happen in ISKCON, because we are following Prabhupada Shiksha. Well, that's what happened, yeah.
There's actually a letter we got in Austin from Prabhupada back in 71 or 72. He said, actually, there's only one guru. It's like you have only one father, you have only one guru, and that's the one who gives you initiation. Prabhupada said that to us in Austin. He wrote a letter like that. And others whose instructions help, you know, connect you, they go off their Shiksha Guru. But now that the Shiksha Guru can say something different. Of course, that's in a different context. In ISKCON, the Shiksha Guru, Srila Prabhupada, has more authority than anyone else. And the Diksha Gurus only are bona fide as Diksha Gurus by purely representing the Shiksha, the founder Acharya. Shiksha Guru, Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya.
Did you want to ask something? Because you've been trying to put your hand up for ages. Go ahead.
Going to ask about the kirtan that you mentioned about.
There
is a mention about in how Prabhupada wanted kirtan in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We have to chant the pranam mantra and Sri Krishna Chaitanya and then Hare Krishna and in the end Haraya Nama. So what do you say about that?
Haraya Nama.
Yeah,
the PC mentions that we chant Pancha Tata Mantra, Hare Krishna Mantra, and then Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Nama.
So, does that mean we can't say Hare Bol? What's wrong with a few Hare Bols? I mean, Prabhupada didn't mention it in the purport, but part of the enthusiasm. Yeah, so we follow that instruction, but at the same time, we can inject some other things that
out of our enthusiasm.
So, what is the borderline? What is the borderline formation that we are now?
Well, nothing unbonafide. Like Prabhu was saying, the Nittai Gaur Radhe Sham, Hare Krishna Hare. There's a whole history for that. You know, in Puri there was, I think it was Radhacharan Das Babaji. He was promoting that. It was at the same time of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And there were some objections coming from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. Yeah.
You look, can I just say something? It's simple for the simple, complicated for the complicated. I mean, it's not rocket science, right? We've been following Prabhupada for many years. And we know, even when Prabhupada was present with us on the planet, what Prabhupada would like us to chant. I don't know why there's all this sort of edginess around the chanting. All I mentioned earlier was that Prabhupada wasn't fond of us chanting Radhe Shyam. But I never heard Prabhupada say anything different other than that. I mean, we sing Namaram Vishnu Padaya, Namaste Sarasvati, we sing the Panchatapa prayers, and we chant the Maha Mantra. And there are plenty of bhajans and other songs that we sing. And we sing them, and they're all in the books. And I don't know why it's getting a bit technical for me. I don't understand why it's getting into this sort of conversation about this mantra, that mantra, you know. What did Prabhupada do when he was on the planet? That's all. Just follow what Prabhupada did. That's all. It's so simple. I keep saying it's simple for the simple, complicated for the complicated. I don't get on mental platform about these things, to be honest. I think it's mental. It's just follow. Just be transparent to what Prabhupada has taught us. It's simple. He was the postman. So we be the postman. No, that's all.
But if there's doubt, then you'll question everything.
Yeah.
What about this? What about that? This and that. And it goes on and on endlessly.
And I suggest, as we ask many, many devotees, do you listen to the Prabhupada's lecture? I ask many devotees, actually ask them, do you have the Prabhupada's lectures?
Yeah.
And they say, oh yes, yes, I have them, whole collection. I say, but do you listen to them? And they go, oh no. We have to read Srila Prabhupada's books, right? Otherwise, how can we understand what is this shiksha? And then Prabhupada, we have 2,000 hours of Srila Prabhupada explaining the subject matter of these things. So without actually, and a lot of devotees also, they come in and say to me, oh, you're so so fortunate that you made Prabhupada, you had association with Prabhupada. And I explained to them, I said, although I saw Prabhupada on many, many occasions, and I was present when he spoke many, many times, my real association with Prabhupada was through my ears. And although I was at a few dozen lectures with Prabhupada, now I can sit down and hear Prabhupada wherever he lectures, anywhere, just by listening to his audio collection. So by this association with the Mahabhagavat through Shabda Brahma, right, everybody can become educated personally by Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah. But it's simple, you know, we chant the Maha Mantra. You know? I don't know why it gone into a really protracted conversation. I don't understand that at all. And I just want to reduce it back to essence. The essence is that we chant Prabhupada's pranam prayers, chant the Panchatattva, and chant the Mana Mantra. And Prabhupada wasn't concerned so much about melody. Prabhupada said you can use different melodies, that's all right. But just do that, and let's do it. Let's go and take some prasad. What do you think?
Yeah, I hope.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.